Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shitting an Attack.
Attack is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated specializes in customer service, low prices, and prompt shipping. You can find our web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I play Marvel Snap still.
I'm Jay, and I've reached the stage of being an old man that when there's a flight delay, it just like completely wipes me out.
And I'm Josh. And I can now count on one hand the number of my most recent Humble Bundle and or Steam Impulse purchases that I have not played. I had a good week of trying out random new stuff.
Wow, that's impressive, kind of.
Yeah, right? In some small subset of the world, that is impressive.
So, I guess stuff from... Discount Games Inc. we can go over. I would say the big thing is that the biggest release or exciting thing since the launch of the new edition of Warhammer 40K is there's a bunch of new releases for Tyranids that come out this weekend, and they've been quite popular, which is nice. They are the
greatest race.
Yeah, sure. everyone should own and play them. They have a new model that is called the Norn Emissary, and it's their new big centerpiece sculpt, and everyone should own like three. So
okay.
Order them from Discount Games Inc.
Jay, I need to know if you can tell me, and we can take this off air if we need to, but how likely and how soon may a Lorcana restock happen? Because my 10-year-old and I, we got the bug now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Partly because we cracked a enchanted hollow foil Mickey and sold it for big monies already.
Oh, really?
And so my 10-year-old's eyes are as wide as plates.
So now, yeah. You've hooked your son on gambling.
Well, are we behind the paywall here? Wait a minute.
No, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. His sister informed him of that, too. And he's like, Dad, she says that we're gambling. And I'm like, well, she's not wrong.
She's not.
Anyway. Is a restock happening, or
so?
Should I really just sell all my cards while they're rare still?
I'm
or scarce. I should.
Funny
say.
Story. I managed to order 15 of the starter decks from Best Buy.
Okay.
And I just got the notification that they're ready to pick up. So I have 15 of those.
Which means you have 15 booster packs.
Yes. Other than that, initially the restock was supposed to happen in September. The CEO, let me find the information. So he said that that's been pushed to October.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said that and then Ravensburger announced another round of Chapter 1 will be available in quarter 1 next year. Currently, there is no other information officially available. So
wait, another chapter? So like
no, that's chapter one, which is the same.
Yeah.
But basically, there's going to be some in October, and then again sometime in quarter one, which probably means April.
Mm.
because that's how...
That's clearly quarter one. Yeah.
That's what quarter one means in these situations, obviously.
I'm always amazed at the gaming industry's lack of ability to see these things.
I mean, they're also hooked on gambling, so that might be part of the problem.
And there's part of me that feels like some of this is that Ravensburger
is just too small.
Just didn't have the capital to
do
an initial print.
According to my baby brother, Ravensburger also hates friendly local game stores and prefers to get things into the big box stores, but I don't know if you can speak to that.
I mean, so I can say that everyone thought that there was going to be way more stuff in big boxes than game stores, and that didn't end up being the case. There just wasn't very much, period. I can say that Ravensburger has been super successful at selling their games like Villainous and et cetera through Target and other big boxes. And so I'm not like super surprised that your brother
expresses that sentiment.
Has that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
So this sort of segues into our main topic because we're going to talk about SaltCon End of Summer. Josh and I are. And one of the games we played there, Josh, brought a bunch of booster packs and we drafted Lorcana and we played.
Thanks to my friendly local game store, Gameopolis.
Yeah. And so my children, on the way home, I do this at every, you know, convention we go. I say,
what was your game of show, right? And they said Lorcana.
Yeah. I asked them what their favorite game was and they both said Lorcana.
Yeah. Also my 10-year-old said that.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, sweet summer child. I asked them, you know, well, did you enjoy the draft portion of it or would you rather play like a constructed style? And they, and my daughter specifically, I sort of didn't get the answer out of my son, but my daughter specifically said I'd rather play constructed. And I'm like, oh gosh, like, you don't know, little girl, you have no clue what it's like to play in a constructed world.
But I feel like you spend more if you love draft than you do constructed.
The cost is not the issue.
Just the curve is the issue then.
I am always a fan of draft. I'll play Magic draft. I mean, I've been.
Well, that's what I enjoyed the most about Lorcana is that we drafted it. And it's interesting because we also played weirdly. You didn't play Magic with me, did you, Trevor?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You were playing something else at the time. But we, another friend of mine had brought some Commander decks, some Lord of the Rings Commander decks, and he really wanted to play. So, you know, we played. And I'm like, boy, I don't like this game as much if I didn't draft it. Like, I just don't, you know?
I won't play constructed Magic. I refuse. I will play draft Magic, and I have many times. I suck at it because I don't play constructed. I don't know the cards well enough to draft well. If I drafted a ton, maybe I would, but I enjoy it every time, even if I get, you know, smashed. I love playing draft. And I would play draft Lorcana, and I did the same thing with Magic draft every time. I would come in with my whatever it was, $15, or I don't remember how much draft was. I haven't done it in a long time, but I would come in with my money. I'd buy my packs. I would find someone to sponsor me from the very beginning, which on new hot drafts, like new sets, was no problem at all. Someone would pay for me to play so that they could get extra packs. Or B, I would just basically, you know, say at the end of the draft, sell everything back to the players, other players. And so draft would end up only costing me, you know, worst case scenario, I usually, you know, it cost me $3 or $4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would pay $3 or $4 to have an enjoyable evening of playing the game that night.
Yeah.
walk home without any
it's
cards.
An amazing entertainment value.
Yeah. So, part of drafting Lurkana at SaltCon this past weekend made me realize that again, to the point that, and we'll see if I follow through with it. I'm like, I'm just going to freaking make a cube of my current Lurkana cards and, like, you know, buy those little reusable booster packs and, like, you know, recreate that feeling of drafting as often as I can until they actually come back into supply. And, you know, then I'll just be lazy and, you know, take the random chance or whatever. But I'm like, that, because I'm with you, Trevor. I'm just like, it's the draft that's worth doing.
Yeah. My kids, they didn't necessarily, that was their first time ever drafting something. So they don't necessarily know the difference. You know, they've played constructed Pokemon a lot, but the truth is they're playing constructed Pokemon against each other.
Right.
And so they don't, and so these are a lot of the Pokemon decks they're getting are basically pre-built, or I've helped them build them and I don't have enough cards to build something serious. And you know, the funny thing is they still have, my son has a deck that they all hate. Like, so they don't want to play against him if he wants to play that deck. And it's not a difficult deck to beat, but they just don't like it because it's constructed, right?
Yeah,
It has this combo that if it goes off, you're like, oh gosh, I can't.
I just lost.
Yeah, I'm losing over and over again to this deck. And it's just, and the funny thing is that deck would be super easy to build or to beat if they just had the, you know, the opposite color.
The counter deck, essentially.
The counter,
right?
Deck beats it. But yeah, because they have limited number of cards and limited number of decks, no one actually has in this household has a deck that counters that deck.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, part of the joy of draft is there's the joy of the discovery in the actual draft. And then there's even this sort of ongoing joy of discovery as you go and play your opponents in the draft and see, like, oh, what did they put together? Oh my gosh, like, I'm an idiot. Why didn't I draft that way?
Yeah, well, why did I pass that card to him over and over again?
Basically.
I let him take all of those cards.
Or, you know, if you're me, you're like, why am I playing with my little brother? This is always a mistake.
I'm like, I had never played before. I didn't really understand the rules before we started. And, you know, it was probably mid game two. Mid match two, where the mechanics clicked for me and I realized, oh, this game is a race. It's a race to lore. Right. It's a race to 20 lore. And I basically drafted every character that ever came to me that had lore 1 instead of lore 2 or 3. I'm screwed. Yeah, it wasn't till, you know, it would have helped to have sat down and played some preconstruct.
If I had known that,
100%.
But it, just playing like a preconstructed deck just once, and I think, and that was the sentiment my daughter said as well, that if she had seen a constructed deck before, to kind of know what sort of combos to look for in her draft would have helped her.
That was definitely a mistake of your host. You know, we rushed it because I had the starter decks and we were almost going to show you guys, and then it was like, nope, we got to go now.
Yeah, I mean, the momentum was there. I don't blame you. If you had stopped to show us and let us play constructed decks while the rest of the crowd went and played something else, I don't know that you would have got everyone back together at the same time again.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's always the challenge at a con.
Yeah, like, I mean,
just timing.
The momentum was there. Everybody was ready. You made the right call. I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. So, and I had fun. I just, my deck had some pretty major flaws.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like I ended up at the kids table, you know, in the loser's bracket. So clearly my deck had more flaws.
I built a ramp deck and then didn't put anything big in it.
Brilliant.
No, you had one big thing, right?
I had two big things. I had Triton and Mufasa. But if I didn't draw either of those, it was sad times. Like, oh, look, I drew a one cost 2/2 with one lore. Well, great. It's round 7. And I've got 9 ink and nothing to play.
But that one time you played Triton, it was pretty awesome.
It's true. Mufasa's pretty amazing. He has 3 lore.
Amazing. All right, so that was your kids' and my kids' game of show, Lorcana Drafting. And whether it was from the drafting or just Lorcana itself, we'll never know for sure. What was yours, Trevor? Or maybe you and I should talk about our top three of the show in whatever order you want.
So I'm bad. I'm not like you. I don't take pictures of each game. I don't really remember what I played. So it's going to be sort of me fumbling through. I'll have to give you a game that I played and say whether I liked it or disliked it. Top three is probably not on the table.
Okay. All right. Reasonable enough. I will start with, Lorcana was easily in my top three. I will say that, but for me, I was talking to my brother about this, and it was like a lot of that came from it being the draft, the fact that we did the draft. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of my other top three, interestingly enough, is a game I've played before, but it just reminded me that it was awesome and I had a good experience. I ended up playing sort of a different strategy than I played before, and I'm like, oh, this was viable, except for, I'm Josh, and so I made a couple missteps along the way. But that was Dune Imperium. And actually, this is a theme of the con for me. My biggest regret is that we played it without the expansion. Because
at this point, it's like expansions, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Like at home, I have both of the expansions, which I have acquired from my friendly local game store, Gameopolis. You may have heard of it.
And they have a third one announced, I think.
Yes. They just announced a third one. They just announced a third one that's like, it's a standalone. It's like an expansion, but you can play it standalone, which I thought was kind of an interesting, what do we call that? Choice, I guess?
Sure.
Yeah, anyway, but so played that with my dad, brother, and my other good friend who had come to the con, Eric, and just had a really tight game, good game, again, just the base game. I ended up playing sort of a Bene Gesserit strategy that I, like, very aggressively. So my deck I had culled very aggressively, and I basically had it to the point where every turn I could buy a Spice Must Flow, which is a point, and then cull it so that it didn't gum my deck. But I took my foot off the gas for basically one turn, and that was the mistake, really. So, so still a good game, still holds up. The whole, deck building with a combat on the board element is really still just a ton of fun, honestly.
And that's the game, a game that I would say is very high on my list of I wish that I had done a deep dive into playing it. I've only played a fairly small number of games of that one, and it feels like some of them were on Tabletop Simulator.
Oh, really? Ooh, yeah, yucky.
I mean, I managed to still like the game, even though.
Yeah, that's impressive. What we should do is after I arrange our King's Dilemma weekend and we get that out of the way, then I should do a Dune Imperium with expansions weekend. And we should just, like you said, deep dive into it, Jay.
Yeah.
I've only played it without expansions, and I wasn't that impressed with it, so I need to revisit it with expansion.
That's right. I remember you were kind of underwhelmed by it.
The base game kind of is underwhelming to me.
Yeah. No, that's fair. It feels like there's kind of limited paths.
Felt like it was kind of same old, like very similar to other board games that had already treaded those waters.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and that's what I say. I think that was part of what was fun for me this weekend is that I was like, it was the base game, and yet I ended up kind of going down a different strategic path than I had done before. So, all right, give us the next one that you want to chat about, Trevor.
I'm having a hard time remembering any of the games I played. So I'm going to start with the one that I played last or near last.
Oh, okay. I'm going to cue you after this then if it's not the one that I think you should talk about. Go ahead. What is the one you played near last? Oh, I know what it is. I'm excited for this.
Thunder Road Vendetta. So Thunder Road Vendetta, we played Sunday morning, kind of the last day of the con. It's chaos.
This is a Restoration Games, like, from the 80s or 70s or 80s remake, right?
I never played the original. I know nothing about it. I don't know how much this is.
What was the name again?
Thunder Road Vendetta. It's essentially Mad Max, the board game.
Yes. Okay.
It's a little bit of... So the way you win is by either getting to the end of... So you're driving along this road to a destination. If you're the first person to arrive, You win if you defeat all of your opponents. Like if you knock all your opponents out, you win. And I'm not having played the original, but knowing 80s board games versus this one, I think it's probably significantly enhanced over the original. I don't think it's the same game. But it does have player elimination. So if that's not your thing, it's definitely not for you. If you like games that ooze theme and that are like total random and a blast to play, this game is a lot of fun. Like it's so much fun. We played it twice.
Back to back. Wow. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. When you left, we were
like, had you finished one game while we were playing Unfathomable? Yes. Oh, yes. I didn't realize that. Okay. Incredible.
Yeah. We were on our second game when you guys left. So, it was a blast. It's fun. Anyway, you have three different cars. There's a small one, a medium one, and a large one. And the small one's harder to shoot at. It's more nimble, but it's easier to slam. And the big one's harder to slam, but easier to shoot. So there's sort of a range of what you're trying to do. Anyway, you have this panel where you can assign a die to each of the cars. You roll four dice at the beginning of each round. And on your turn, you take one of the dice and you assign it to one of the cars. And the dice basically moves the car. And then the fourth die, during one of those turns, you can assign it to your control panel, which has four options. And one of those options is to move one of your helicopters around, have it shoot a car. Sometimes you can position it, because if a car ends up directly underneath the helicopter, they're also eliminated. Then the second one is...
Wait, so is the helicopter one of your three vehicles?
It's a fourth thing. It's not trying to get to the end. It's almost like a terrain piece that you can place. So you place the helicopter on the game board and it can shoot cars right like directly in front of it. Or one of the things you can try to do is if you slam a car off of the board or onto a piece of terrain that is an object basically that can't be like a set of rocks.
Like a hazard of some sort.
Yeah, hazard. Okay. The car gets eliminated. The other way you can eliminate them is to slam them underneath a helicopter and they immediately get it. So you can place a helicopter with the intent to try to slam someone's car underneath the helicopter. So anyway, placing the helicopter is one of the control panel options. One of them is turbo boost. It's basically like if the die is 1-3, it gives you 1-3 extra spaces on that move. There's one of them that is a repair. So if you roll a 6, you can put your die in the repair part of your control panel and you can repair one of your cars. And the last location is drift. If you put your die in that location, and these have specific numbers that they'll work on, like the helicopter's any number on the die. The turbo's like 1-3. The drift is 3-5, I think. And 6 is repair only or something like that. I don't remember.
Okay.
The drift lets you, rather than slam the first car you run into, it lets you move through the car. Cause sometimes you need to be able to get through a car that's in the middle of your path. So anyway, it's quite simple. On your turn, you assign a die, you move the car. If you run into another car, you resolve a slam. If you're a bigger car than the target, you can re-roll the slam dice. And then at the end of your move, if there's a car in your front arc, you can, and it's within one space of you, you can shoot. You roll the shoot die. Cars take 2 damage and then they're knocked out. They're not knocked out, they're disabled. If they get knocked off the board, they're knocked out. If they get knocked into the other things that I already mentioned, they're knocked out. If they get let, so as you move forward, there's three boards that represent the road. And if somebody moves off the end of the last board, the third board, the first board gets removed. And if your car is on that board,
you get eliminated. You get Mario'd.
And then the whole board shifts and you put a new car, a new road. So the road is constantly moving. Yeah. And the ending will never show up until someone gets eliminated. So if you move off of the end of the board and someone has already been eliminated, you'll add one more road tile. And then the game it's basically in the final throws. Get to the end of that board or eliminate your opponents and you win. Anyway, it's very quick playing. It's chaos. It's a lot of fun. Crazy things happen. You know, things like you slam their little car with your big car. You roll the dice. It's throwing you, the big car, off rather than the little car. You're like, oh, I'll re-roll that. And you re-roll the same thing. And their little car knocks your big car off the road and you lose. And you laugh about it and you enjoy every minute of it. But I mean, clearly this is not for Euro gamers. But if you like Mad Max theme, if you like a little chaos and you like games that play quickly, but we all loved it. I mean, it was a blast. It oozed theme everywhere. And some of the craziest things happened.
Yeah, so. We did hear laughs and cheers from that table on multiple occasions. So that is awesome. Well, so I'm just gonna prompt you, Trevor. I feel like the next one you should talk about is also a race game of sorts. And Trevor brought it, and so I'll let him talk about it. But then I'll talk about my experience with it, because this, I'm gonna call this honorable mention. Actually, for Eric, this was his game of show, though he did tell me that. And this is, tell me if I got the title right, Trevor, 1944 Race to the Rhine.
No, that's the original. This is a reprint. It's called Keep 'em Rolling Race to the Rhine.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah,
there are differences between the one we played and that one. That's the original one.
Mm-hmm.
So this one has some rules clarifications. Basically, some of the expansions are built in. So Keep 'em Rolling Race to the Rhine. It is a four-player game, up to four-player. Originally, the original game was only a three-player. You each take a general from World War II, General Montgomery, General Bradley, General Patton, and I don't remember the generals that you played, Josh, I'm sorry. But your goal is to get from basically Western France to across the Rhine. And the first person to get across the Rhine wins. And the game, I would call it a race. I mean, it has race in the name, and you are trying to get there first. But the game, the core of the game is logistics.
Logistics management. Yeah.
Yeah. Logistics management. So the point is to be able to get fuel, food, and ammunition to the front lines. And so the most important resource, in my opinion, was trucks. So you're placing trucks and moving food, fuel, and ammunition to the front lines to keep these armies moving forward and to be the first person to arrive. And what I'll say about this game is I'm not going to give it an opinion, because I feel like that this is one of those games where there is a matrix to be unlocked, and it feels like none of us figured it out.
No, I mean, in a lot of ways, the Axis won. Like,
yeah,
it turns out if we were the generals, the alternate history is way different.
Yeah, don't hire us to be the generals of your army pushing into the fascist nation, because we'll fail.
Yeah.
And we did. We failed big time. Like, none of us made it. And there is an alternate path to victory. Basically, if you fail to get across the Rhine, there is an in-game condition, and Eric won. But it was ugly.
But at what cost, really? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It was pretty ugly. So I'm terribly interested in it, and I desperately want to play it again. But I don't know what to think of it, because we failed so badly. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, either it's just this hard and you're not intended to do what the great generals of the past did, or we just haven't figured it out yet. There's mechanics to the game that we just haven't gotten figured out yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I definitely want to replay. Like, I was even thinking, because we played it with, it was Trevor, myself, Eric, and then my 10-year-old. And he did okay at it, you know what I mean? I think he actually did better than me. Of course, that's because I, in a fit of pique, I spent basically three of my victory points for a, was it a completely fruitless attack, Trevor? I can't decide.
No, it wasn't. Well, it was an overallocation of force. How's that?
Generous. That's generous is what that is. But anyway, but I was thinking, like, maybe we should, after we finish ISS Vanguard, we should have an evening where we just get together with the boys and play through it again. Because I'm with you. I'm like, it definitely feels like something that would be fun to explore further, right? Like, it's interesting. It felt different in a way, right? And, of course, I have no idea how it compares to the original.
Yeah, I don't either, because I never played the original. But it was interesting to me because it's a completely different take on any war games. In fact, it's really not a war game at all.
Right, right.
It's just it's a logistics game based on, a historical issue. I mean, that was very much their issue, was getting supplies to the front lines fast enough. So it does a really good job of theming it, and it feels well themed. But it is about trucking supplies across France and how difficult that is to keep up with. And one of the things I think it does really well as well is that, those generals had an issue where if they got too deep, too quickly, then their flanks were exposed.
Yeah.
And this game does that really well. Like if you move too fast and you get beyond the generals to your left and your right, all of a sudden, you know, you're facing issues. So it sort of has this almost built-in catch-up mechanic. And I think part of the issue was none of us were moving very quickly except for your son, and he moved so fast ahead of us that that he ran into problems.
Yeah, I mean, he was the only one that suffered that particular fate, right?
Yeah. So it's also interesting to me that it's somewhat, it's not completely asymmetrical, but it does have some asymmetrical aspects. Each general has their own challenges and their own
powers
and their own special abilities. And they're taking a special corridor through France. And so there's special things for each of them in those different corridors. Anyway, it's a very interesting game. I don't know if I like it or not yet. So, you know, I'll try to give a better review after I've played it a second time. Cause the first time I was befuddled the whole time trying to figure out how to get my fuel and food to the front lines. I was just like, I have no idea how to do this.
That is a generous description of what I was experiencing. Befuddlement.
Yeah. Befuddlement.
Yeah. So
I think one of the things that screwed us was Eric took all but one of the trucks. Very early.
Yeah. That early move was like, And that's probably why I want to play to be like replay, because I'm like, is that sort of a game breaking move? You know what I mean? Like if somebody does that, like, are you just hosed, period, always?
I don't know. It went in the game, but in a way that was hard to swallow for me.
Yeah.
But him doing that left one truck available, which normally for an action you take like six trucks, but the game has like a reset round when the final truck is taken. And so no one wanted to be the guy to take the action that only gave them one truck, but it caused that kind of refresh to not happen, which meant we were all underfunded, I guess would be maybe mm-hmm. the right term.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I want to just make one more mention about the production values on Keep 'Em Rolling, Race to the Rhine, before I talk about our next game, which is not in my top three. As a matter of fact, it is my worst game of the show, but I really want to have a discussion about it with Trevor. But one last thing I want to say about Keep 'Em Rolling is that the production values were stellar. Like the meeples that are basically food cans and ammunition crates and fuel were super cool. The trucks 50 are gallon fun.
Barrels basically,
yeah, fuel. You know, so all of that was like really fun design choices and really well produced, and so, you know, applause, and I do look forward to a replay on it. Okay, so the next game I want to bring up, and I'll mention it and describe it, and then I want to hear Trevor's reaction to it. But Trevor and I got sucked in by my particular neurosis of, you know, wanting to play every Civilization game that's ever developed. We sucked ourselves into playing a game called Dominations, which is a play on dominoes. And, you know, the concept of the game is that you have this hand of triangle dominoes, you know, and each side of that triangle has colored beads on it. And you lay them out, I should say each corner has the colored beads. You lay these dominoes down, and depending on how they lay down versus previously played dominoes and what have you, they generate, I guess you call them resources. They generate these colored resources for you. And, you know, you then can use those resources to build cities, to kind of to add to, I guess, what you would call the tech tree, which is the tech tree is sort of this puzzle of little square tiles that, you know, certain tiles can only lay down next to other certain tiles because they have to form a bead. So each of those square tiles has, you know, four half beads on each of its sides. And so you're laying them out. And so everybody's tree ends up looking a little differently, but those are the techs. And so they end up having, you know, giving you different powers or different resource creation or, access to other techs, so on and so forth. Right. And so, that's kind of the overall description. I mean, it checks a lot of the Civilization style boxes. It kind of has that different gimmick of the fact that you're growing the land with dominoes. It does have wonders that kind of fit in with the dominoes a little differently, but I'm gonna hear Trevor's reaction.
The wonders are go on the board as well. So like some of the wonders might be a big triangle and they'll be part of the domino board. And some of them might be some of them are circle wonders and they go in the center. When you complete a section of the board, you can put a wonder there. So I think the tech tree part of it, where you start with your first tile is called your campfire, and then it has wilds on its four beads, as Josh called them. So you can, from there, you can build out any direction you want. But then you start getting specific colors, and the colors represent different trees of the techs, you know, like religion, trade, et cetera, military.
Craftsmanship.
Yeah. And so you're placing those down, and then you kind of have to figure out how to place these. And eventually you get to the point where there's a square in your board, but to place something there, it would have to match multiple locations. And each tech has the four beads have different configurations. So if you're the first one to build it, you can look through that four different cards for that same tech, and you can pick the bead configuration that you like. This part of the game, the tech tree board and the different techs, it's brilliant. I love this part of it. That said, basically everything else about the game sucks.
There is no faint praise here, baby.
I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I had fun. Don't get me wrong, but having played a lot of these games in the past, I think the designer got a little too focused on the gimmick.
And the dominoes gimmick, you mean?
Yeah, the dominoes gimmick, and just, you know, and the name, the domination.
Yeah, yeah. He went fully into the dad joke.
Yeah, yeah. He went all in on the gimmick, and there's two issues with it. The first issue is it feels like the domino placing part of it is not that fun, and the second issue is that it overstays its welcome. Like, this game takes way too long to play. At least it did for us.
Oh, and I want to add, you know, the thing about the domino part not being that fun, part of what's not fun about it is, like, you can't really plan for your turn until it comes to your turn.
Yeah.
And then you almost are subject to it's really hard to not fall into analysis paralysis, like, just straight up, because you get there, you have this hand of seven triangles, and you have a board that's been radically altered since you last saw it, and so you're starting from scratch as your turn rolls around. I feel like that's part of what made it overstay its welcome. I agree with that statement from Trevor. It really did just took too long for not enough reward, you know?
Yeah, and the game got slower and slower. Like, right. as the rounds went on, the game got slower and slower because the board got bigger and bigger. And it's just, and I shouldn't complain about this because I won, but I'm going to. There was a round where the seven tiles I drew, there was none of them that I wanted. I basically had nothing in hand that was the path that I was looking for. Like, yeah. I was trying to build down the military path, which was the red color, and I drew a hand and I had yellow, green, and purple. And that was it.
But I think we doubled the, you know, manufacturer's playtime on the box, you know, which is just egregious. And like, in the amount of time it took us to play Dominations, we could have played one of the other great Civilization games that I had brought, which is Clash of Cultures. And so,
oh, you brought Clash of Cultures? I didn't know you had it there.
Oh man, I should have spoke up sooner then. Yeah, because,
oh my gosh, we could have,
because I mean, Clash of Cultures is one of the top three Civ games, like, hands down. I will fight, you know, for that truth.
And I have a handful of Civ games that I absolutely love, and Clash of Cultures is definitely one of them. But anytime I play one that takes too long, I always end up comparing it to Golden Age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We talked about that. So,
because Golden Age is like, it's like, what would it be? 15 minutes per player?
Yeah, I think so. And it's such a stripped down, like, streamlined Civ game, right?
Yeah, it checks all of the fun boxes. It feels like let's sit down and play Civ 3 or whatever, but we're all going to get to participate, and the entire game is going to take an hour tops, and it just pushes you through the game so quick, and it's just fun. And unlike games that end so quickly before, it feels like you ate a full meal.
Yeah, it feels like you saw a civilization rise and fall, you know, or maybe rise and reign supreme, which does occasionally happen for me.
I mean, it doesn't check all of my boxes. You know, I do enjoy a longer Civ game where Clash of Cultures or the last Civilization game board game from Fantasy Flight before the current one, which I really need to replay the current. But the last one, it's one of my favorite all time games. Those are just some really amazing games. I love all of those. But if I'm like, I want that full feeling, but I want to complete it in an hour, Golden Age, especially with expansion, is just amazing. And this game, again, I love the tech tree, but everything else about it was just, it really screamed the designer had a sacred cow that he refused to kill.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. Let this be a lesson, folks. Don't overcommit to your dad jokes. Okay, so now briefly, I'm going to talk about my other top three with a caveat, and then maybe we can do a lightning round. I can just mention other stuff I played, and Trevor can tell me if he played it or not, and we can have a quick reaction round to it. But so my other top three is a game I've played many times. One of the things I was most excited about playing it is because my 10-year-old suggested it. He was just like, hey, what about this? And so we whipped it out. The caveat is that, and everybody I was playing with got tired of me saying this, is that this game should never be played without the expansion again. It should not be sold without the expansion. It makes a monumental difference to play with or without the expansion. So yeah. So this is Zaya, Legends of the Drift System. I think we've talked about it many times on this podcast, but just briefly, it is a... Well, it's Starfield, the board game, really. I mean, it is a sandbox space exploration and, you know, merchant marine or pirate or hero, right? There's just so many ways you can get points. It's funny, my brother and I, we were talking about it as we're playing, and he looks at me and he's like, why do we like this game? Like, it checks so many boxes that we claim to hate, right? Just like,
yes,
it's, you know, random. Incredibly random, like... pretty long downtime in between turns, right? Just like, I can't remember what his other things were that he said, you know, I'm just like, it just tells incredible stories. And even, it still told a pretty incredible story here, but without the expansion, it just falls prey to some real issues. Like, the truth is, and this is how it played out, this game is like, without the expansion, you're just looking for the milk run of, you can pick up goods at this planet and fly quickly to the next planet and sell them, rinse, repeat. You know, and the expansion adds this economy board that takes away the ability to do that, you know, ad nauseum.
The economy board in that game is brilliant.
Yeah, like, it's super critical, that, right?
Yeah, finding that flaw in the base game and then finding a way to solve the problem with that board, they did it. It is a brilliant solution to that problem. But yeah, in the base, I honestly, when you guys said we're playing Zaya and you're like, and we're playing it without the expansion, I both eyebrows raised.
Yeah, you wisely stepped away, right?
Yeah, I'm like, no.
You know, and again, part of the trap for me is it's like the 10-year-old suggested it. He still had a great time playing it. And so I just love when he will think about something he wants to play and suggest it. And it's a half-decent game, you know, like...
love Zaya. If you guys had said, do you want to play, I would have hopped in. I love it, even without the expansion. But it is one of those things where you're like, really? You're going to play without the expansion?
Yeah, yeah. Because it makes missions better. It makes combat more viable. You know, there's a little bit more of the galaxy to explore. I mean, just, and again, the economy is really the biggest
fix. Yeah, it is the biggest fix.
It makes death a little more... better done. I was gonna say more palatable. Anyway, just it makes a huge difference. And so my brother just glared at me at one point because I had said like, well, in the expansion that's it. Well, in the expansion, that was me the whole game. He glared at me and he's like, just bring it next time then, you know, like there's no reason you shouldn't load up this game every time you come to something. So fine. All right. Any other one that's on your mind, Trevor, that you want to mention before we maybe just do a little lightning round?
I'll be honest. I know I played other games, but I'm blanking.
Okay,
fair enough. What else I played?
Well, so here's another one I think you played. Quick lightning round reaction. It was called Hero Tales of the Tomes. Gosh, how do you freaking describe it? It's I guess I would call it semi co-op hero builder, right? Like you start with a hero, and he levels up over time, and you you're kind of getting cards randomly from a deck that will be equipment or powers or spells. It is, I will just say the cards are beautiful. Like, you know, if you want to look at something beautiful, that's, it's worth looking at. I'm not sure I would play it again. Like it,
this is your the game your brother brought.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I didn't actually know the name of it.
Okay. Okay.
So my personal opinion is this game was made by a Magic player who wanted Commander, to be a board game.
But that is a, yeah, that's a brilliant, succinct description.
Just play Commander.
Okay.
I'm gonna leave it at that.
Good lightning round.
Yeah, like, there's no reason to play this game. Play Commander.
Yeah, there you go. Just pretty to look at. Next game, I can't remember if Trevor got to play this one with me or not, but it's Scout. It was the Spiel des Jahres winner last year. It is a trick-taking card game. The gimmick is that you cannot reorder your hand. So you pick up your hand and you have to choose if you're playing it the way you picked it up, or you can turn it upside down. And then once you make that decision, you can never reorder anything. The only way that the sort of order of your hand changes is that you have the ability to pick up cards from the active trick and then slot them into your hand somewhere. And so that can sometimes give you the run or the three of a kind that you need. Anyway, brilliant little, I mean, plays in 20 to 30 minutes tops. It deserved its prize. Just a really slick trick taking game with kind of an interesting gimmick.
So I did play this.
Okay.
And I'm going to complain about it slightly because, and this could be a wheelering.
Yeah.
Admit.
Potentially.
Potentially. I was turned off on this game when, I put together a hand where I played like five cards basically in a run, which should be a really awesome play. And the game has this system where, like, if nobody can outplay the hand that you've put down, the trick that you've put down, the round ends.
Yeah, if it comes back around to you.
If it comes basically back around to you. So I thought this would be awesome to have it come back around to me. But when I did, I still had cards in hand, and I basically ended up losing points in that round because of it.
Yeah, I probably should, when I teach this game, like, pull out the rule book and point to that and then explain it again. Because I remember the first time I played it with my oldest daughter, it caught her off guard, too. Like, same kind of thing. She's like, excuse me, what?
Yeah, like, I thought, you know, if I got it to come back around to me and I won the round, I'd get, you know, I got, like, it'd almost be like running shooting the moon. You would get the points and you'd stick everyone else with their cards because they'd have to, because basically they're drawing a card off of your trick that you've put out.
Right,
your
right.
Thing that you put out. They're drawing those cards. They're coming to their hand and you're losing cards that would have been in your hand the entire time. And so I thought, oh, this would be amazing. And when I got back to me and I found out that the cards that were still in my hand, and I got no extra points other than
for winning it,
for right. going around the table. I was like, oh, well, you know, that was a stupid play then. You know, doing what I thought was a game winning play was actually a failure. So, I never unlocked the Matrix with this game. I never could figure out what I should be doing. Your brother was smashing us every time. And I'm just like, I don't understand what he's doing different than me. Yeah.
All right, good lightning round on that one. One that I know Trevor did not get to play with me. I just played it with my son and father. And my dad is, like, obsessed with this game at the moment. I think it's because he kickstarted it. But it's called City of the Great Machine. And it's a co-op, but if you have four players, it becomes a one versus many. So it's this sort of, like, dystopian future city where the Great Machine is, like, this, you know, steampunk-looking AI that basically runs the city. And, you know, it has steampunky minions that are out there oppressing the people. And so you are these heroes who are kind of like raising up a rebellion against the Great Machine. You're trying to cause riots in different parts of the city. And if you cause enough of them before his master plan is completed, then you win. And so it would be interesting. I want to play it again because it was much more fun than I expected. Sometimes I go into Kickstarter games with, I'm a little leery of them. You know what I mean? Especially if I didn't kickstart it, which is arrogant as all get out, but it was much more fun than I thought. It was pretty elegant mechanics, quick turns, you know what I mean? But it would be really interesting to play it with a full four players and see you know, it, the fourth player becomes the great machine. And so it's like, as the heroes spend currency to do things, that becomes the great machine's currency on its turn to, you know, use its minions or punish the heroes or arrest them or what have you. And so anyway, it's really pretty art. Like, it's well done. It's a well done sort of steampunk motif. And I was glad we got to play it. I think the 10-year-old and I will definitely play it with Grandpa again in the not too distant future.
Yeah, it looks beautiful on the table.
Yeah, yeah, it has great table presence too. That's true.
The production quality looks amazing.
So if it were not for Dominations, this one would probably have been my worst game of show. Although it was hard to overcome the enthusiasm that both Trevor and I's youngest sons had for this game, but they brought out from the library Portal, the uncooperative acquisition game, I think is what it's called. So it was put out by Steam or by Valve. I mean, it's a Portal board game. It has a little turret mini. It has a companion cube mini. I mean, so it is like pandering to a Portal fan so much. And my 10-year-old loves Portal. Like, he has beat it, I don't know, half a dozen times, because I'm such a good father. I let him play way too many video games.
Yeah. So the full name is Portal, the uncooperative cake acquisition
game. That's right. Okay. That's right. So it definitely it has the humor like you're in a Portal game. It's the board is like kind of a scrolling board, like that Thunder Road Vendetta that Trevor was describing. Like, basically every turn you move some of your pawns, and then you have to recycle/throw into the incinerator one room that's on the end of the board, and then it reappears on the front end of the board, you know. And so the board is constantly changing, and you're basically trying to like get as much cake as you can and keep it from getting dumped in the incinerator. And so you can grab other people's cake and, you know, run off with it and make sure it gets destroyed and stuff. And it's very random. It has these aperture cards that when you play them, then they flip over and become a character. And so the characters are like, they change major rule. Every character seems like it changes one major rule, right? And so anyway, it's quite random. It just took too long. Like, basically at one point Trevor walked over and he sort of took mercy on me. You could see it in my face, and like, he looked up, like, you know, how to end the game quickly kind of thing. And so I started throwing my people into the turrets just to die so that the game would end. But it was funny, because, like, again, both of our 10-year-olds liked it enough that they played it on their own independently, which it's always like, well, I can't really complain about that. But anyway, it was not necessarily for me. And you didn't play it, right, Trevor?
No. So I locked up while Valve was involved, the publisher is Cryptozoic.
Oh, and that's right.
And I have seeing that on the box makes me break out in hives. Like,
it's a bad taste. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to do anything to do with Cryptozoic. So,
yeah.
Yeah. They don't exactly have a great track record for me.
It's probably a wise policy at this point. So,
yeah. I can't think of anything Cryptozoic that I've actually enjoyed. I'm sure there is something. So I don't want to make it sound
completely off. Blanket statement, but close.
Yeah. But it's pretty close. Like, they take, like, they love to take IPs or, yeah, mostly IPs, and just like basically spit out something that is mediocre and then ride the IP all the way home, which is, I mean, is essentially what you just described.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, like, they definitely catered to the IP lovers on this one. All right, my last two quick mentions. Trevor didn't get to play these with me, so I can just kind of give a brief initial reaction. Played Heat, which is a new race car game by Days of Wonder. It has the Days of Wonder polish on it. It looks really good. It has multiple tracks. And the part of it that I didn't get to play is there's actually ways to have your cars built out differently. So, like, there's different upgrade cards, and so your cars can end up being very different. But it felt like a pretty clever system. You basically have a deck, and you have an engine that contains heat cards, and then you have your discard. And there are certain things that you do in the game, like, you know, shifting gears aggressively or you know, blowing through corners too fast, that will cause you to spend heat, which means you pull the heat cards out of your engine and dump them into your discard. And so then they'll, you know, eventually shuffle into your deck and end up in your hand and gum your hand up. And so then there's ways to get engine cooldown, and cooldown lets you dump heat from your hand back to the engine. And that's the only way to get rid of heat. Like, you can't normally discard it. And so anyway, and so other than that, it's pretty simple. Like, you know, you play a number of cards equal to the gear that you're in. Like, if you're in third gear, you're going to play three cards. And, you know, you add up the speed that they are, and that's how many spaces your car is going to move. And then there's some elements like, you know, if you're in the right position, you can draft. Slipstream. Thank you. I was thinking draft. You can slipstream, and get ahead of other cars, that kind of stuff. Anyway, really slick. We just played one lap of a two-lap race. But, I mean, it plays – you would easily play a full race in probably 45 minutes. Actually, it's funny because I don't know if my dad and brother will ever play the game again because – bless the person's heart, that the volunteer there that was teaching the game, he did a great job, but he was so overly thorough. Like, he basically went through every rule of the game probably three times, like to an encyclopedic degree. And so I think we spent more time learning the game, quote unquote, than we did playing that one lap. So,
I would love to have seen your brother just squirm.
Oh, yeah. He was dying. And I think my dad almost mouthed a swear word to me about, like, because my dad, he loses patience faster than even my brother and I, where he'll just be like, let us start playing, you know, like, let's go. And so this was like three times in a row that he was looking.
I did not know that. I wonder how many times he's done that with me, because I'm usually pretty thorough about rules, too.
Yeah, nothing like this, though. I mean, the problem was, like, this guy was, like, literally repeating, you know, because he went through the rule book and then he went through the player aid, because the player aid where your deck and your engine and your discard are, it has all the steps of the game printed on it graphically. It looks really cool, you know, and so it was really easy to just do the game once we got going. So I highly recommend. I think it's hard to get right now. I mean, honestly, if it came in, Jay, I would tell you to set one aside for me because it was a fun racing game. Like, and it was different than like Downforce. Downforce is a cool racing game for the betting aspect of it, right? Like, Heat was just a streamlined, well done race. Like, the race part is the fun part, you know.
This is the one game that I regret not finding a way to get played over the weekend.
Well, I think didn't your son, he played it at one point, right?
Yeah.
He snuck off because it was in the hot games area, right?
Yeah, he wandered off, and when I found him, he was sitting down playing it. So
my final game that I'll mention that I got to play, it was my last game of the show. It held up really good, although I'm going to have a brief commentary about this style of game. But it was Unfathomable, which is the Battlestar Galactica reskin, you know, the...
Yeah.
Co-op of trying to survive a transatlantic journey in a Lovecraftian world assaulted by deep ones, and at one point there will be at least one traitor in your midst. It was a lot of fun. It came down to, like, you know, the last play, and the bad guys won, and the bad guys were my brother and dad, which is the worst, and they hadn't been bad guys until the end. But the worst part about the game is that at one of, you know, the main mechanic of the game is you do these challenges where everyone secretly contributes cards that, if they're of the right color, they contribute to beating the challenge, and if they're the wrong color, they hurt you, right? And my son, I think he was screwing around. I think he was like in a 10-year-old prankster mood or whatever. He clearly dropped at least one bad card into the challenge, and it was like nobody else could have done that, and so we were just sure that he was the hybrid, and so treated him in that way. And then the very next turn, because what's interesting about that game is there's two points in the game where you get dealt a loyalty card, whether you're human or hybrid, right? And it was like the turn after he did that the second set of cards got dealt. And so up until that point, come to find out, nobody had been a bad guy. We had all been humans. We were all working together. And then he basically set it up so that as my dad and brother got dealt their hybrid traitor cards, like they were just handed this like plum pie, like, here you go, finish devouring the idiot humans, you know. And so that is the one challenge in that game. Like, if somebody makes a mistake or feels 10-year-old level malicious, you know, like it just kind of can go off the rails really hard. So still, it was a ton of fun, though. And really great production on that, Unfathomable. So I think that covered most of the games I played for the con. Another great con, honestly. Like, they do such a good job down there.
I would say that that's a game that I would not play with my child.
Because you need that, like, fully developed guile, you know, to really get a good play of that, right?
Yes, and yeah. And they are not prepared emotionally to be able to make that work. So, and that game is a shared experience, right? You're trying
very
to
much so, right?
You're all trying to create this story almost in a way. And if somebody's like actively working against that story, against their own, you know, because in that case he's actively working against.
Yeah, he worked against his own better interest. Yeah, 100%. So
yeah. And if that happens in that game, it just kind of ruins the whole experience for everyone.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Jay, do you have an audible version of a visual meme for us before I tell a dad joke and make you guess?
This is in the format of the Star Wars meme where Anakin is the fore panel of Anakin talking to
Padme.
Padme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So first panel is Paul looking at a smile towards Chani, and he says, "We should join forces." And then, Chani smiles back at him and says, "To save the universe." And Paul looks away and smiles, and she says, "To save it, right?" Smiling at him again.
Spoiler alert! I love it. All right, you may now guess if it was written by AI. Why do golfers bring two pairs of pants when they go golfing?
In case they get a hole in one.
Boom! Correct.
That's actually pretty good.
Was it written by AI or not?
I'm going to say not.
You are incorrect in this case. Although,
oh, dang it!
I do think that joke has probably been written before AI.
I think I've heard that before.
You know, yeah. And so when I say AI wrote it, it probably went out and found it and, you know, pieced it together. But
as far as AI is concerned, it created it.
That's right. Exactly. It takes complete credit at this point.
that is AI is the massive, massive buzzword at my work right now.
Oh, I believe it.
Oh, my gosh. There's no rest when it comes to AI. We basically every meeting, everything we do, it is all like, well, how does AI affect this? Oh, gosh. Mm,
good. I'm glad you guys will be ready to combat it for us.
Oh,
whereas
no,
I simply welcome our robot overlords. My children actively mock me when they see some of my AI threads that I'm like polite to ChatGPT all the time. Good job, ChatGPT. Now, could you do this for me? All right, gentlemen.
All right. Have a good day. And thanks. Stay tuned for next episode.
Excellent.